We're going to go right into our next presentation. I know on your agenda that it says we have Brian Klaus, but he was unable to make it. And so we have with us today Mike Arno. Is that how you pronounce your last name? Is a research analyst on the global credit team. He is responsible for providing credit research analysis and support. He joined Brandywine Global as a product specialist within client service in 2006 and has been a member of the global credit team since April 2011. Prior to joining Brandywine Global in 2006, Mike was an associate for the Vanguard Group. A CFA charter holder, he earned a BS in finance from Temple University. Please help me welcome Mr. Arno.
Thank you. Yeah, my my colleague, after a summer filled with emerging market volatility and Greece being booted in or out of the euro, came down with shingles about 3 weeks ago. So I think the China deval finally kind of set him over the edge. For those of you, I know we have some clients in the audience. For those of you who don't know, Brandywine, we are headquartered in Philadelphia. We manage about $70 billion with $50 billion in global fixed income. Of that $50 billion, we have about $8 billion in corporate credit and structured credit and global high-yield bonds as well. The agenda today, we're going to cover a lot of different topics, including the development of the global bond market, the corporate bond market. There's been a tremendous amount of issuance the last 10 to 15 years in both the investment grade and high yield space. Talk a little bit about the global sovereign bond market and some of the transition from hard currency bonds to local currency bonds in the 2000s. The importance of active currency management. Highlight some of the stuff that's been going on in the emerging market, including the hard currency, local currency sovereigns, as well as the corporate bond market. That market today is at $11 trillion in total size. And obviously, as you guys are probably well aware, under significant pressure the last 3 years. And finally, we'll wrap it up with a very simple and non-complex topic of the structured credit market. And we'll be highlighting some of the stuff in European RMBS, the CMBS market in the U.S., as well as the ABS market. And also highlight some of the stuff going on in the global loan market in the U.S. primarily, and the continued development in the European market. And finish it up with some talk about the derivatives market and some of the exchange-traded derivatives and things like that that we're using in the portfolios to hedge risk or to augment the exposure, the risk profile of the portfolio. At some point, we're going to have to stop using this chart because we can't find the updated data to this. This is as of 12/31 of 2012. What we're really just highlighting here is, from an equity standpoint, institutional investors have really accepted the international equity markets. And today, roughly, the portfolio is about 65% in the U.S. and 35% in the international equity market. However, when you look at the bond market, institutional investors are 92% roughly allocated to U.S. bonds and only 8% in the international bond market. This is just a look at some of the general indices that we would see in our universe. Covers kind of the broad categories of sovereign-only indices for the Citigroup WGBI. Some of the aggregate indices in the U.S. and global, as well as the J.P. Morgan EM Diversified Index, which has, this is the third year in a row now we're seeing significant negative performance. Through the end of August, the index is down around 12.3%, and as you can see, a three-year annualized return of negative 7%. We think there's some pretty good value opportunities being created in these markets with this continued sell-off. Just going to quickly highlight some of the stuff here. So what we're doing on this page really is just identifying the different segments of the global high-yield market, and I'll do the same on the next page in the investment-grade market. With the global high yield universe, we have seen significant issuance in the European market and in other countries in LATAM and Asia, which we'll show some charts on this shortly. But it really it highlights a dispersion of performance amongst these different regions and credit rating strata and the opportunities for a manager with a global focus. Today, with the continued sell-off in the high-yield market, yields now are well over 7%, with some significant value being created in some of the sectors in the global high-yield market, including Europe and the U.S. I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but as you can see, that we broke down some of the other segments of the investment-grade market in AA, single A, and triple B across the different regions of the world and currencies. This next slide is pretty interesting. When we talk to people about moving towards a global mandate, and you know whether it be high yield or investment grade, the fact is, you know, these guys are typically have a U.S. bias. But however, you look at the Bank of America investment grade and high yield indices, there's actually significant exposure to non-U.S. companies. The investment grade benchmark is about 30%. Non-U.S. and the high-yield benchmark is about 20, and both of these indices have some significant emerging market exposure. Actually, this was in July. Bank of America finally came out and said that they would actually put together some indices that are strictly U.S. and without the EM tilt in some of their U.S. benchmarks. I'm going to spend a few minutes on the evolution of kind of the global high-yield investment-grade markets in the, over the last 10 years. And really, the expanding opportunity is coming in Europe. And this is due to the bank deleveraging that's been going on to the tune of $560 billion over the last probably 5 years. So we're seeing significant first-time issuers coming to the European high-yield market. Traditionally, high-yield companies in Europe relied on bank lending. So roughly about 80% of their borrowing was through the banks, with about 20% in the markets. And that's actually pretty much the complete opposite in the U.S. market, where 80% of the issuance is through a leverage loan or a high-yield bond, and 20% is probably through some revolver or bank line. So we're seeing, the chart on the left here just highlights the allocation of the Bank of America Global High Yield Index, and seeing that the U.S. at one time had been around 80%, and now we're down to about 50% with the significant growth in the European market. And you can see on the right-hand side, we're just highlighting the issuer count. So looking at, you know, the U.S. market has been fairly stable as far as the number of issuers are concerned. We've seen a tremendous growth in the European market with the disintermediation going on there. Also, some growth in the Asia and Latin America as well. For the investment grade market, it's actually been fairly evenly split and distributed between the U.S. and non-U.S. Roughly 50% U.S. and then 50% non-U.S. Basically, these are typically global companies, very large, and have been using the capital markets. Again, same concept here. We're looking at the size of the asset growth in these different markets in LATAM, Asia, EMEA, and European. So really significant growth. The U.S. On the right hand or the left hand side in the high yield market. U.S. has grown about two times since 2008, while the other components here, LATAM, Asia, EU, and EMEA, have, from an AUM standpoint, have gained about five times since 2008. And again, big theme being bank disintermediation. And these companies have to go to the capital markets, which is attractive for us because we're able to pick up some additional yield because a lot of these guys are either first-time issuers and haven't issued in the past, so you get a premium for that. Going to move on to currency management. It's been a pretty interesting time period the last 3 years in the currency markets. This chart runs through the year. Now you can see the trailing 1 year as of 6/30. However, if you look at a three-year return of some of these currencies, you have some currencies down 35% to 50% over the last 3 years on a spot return basis. So some significant depreciation, as we saw in the emerging market index. This is the third year in a row where we're seeing negative performance. So currency management, if you're not actively hedging or thinking about hedging currency, you can really wipe away a lot of the return that you're achieving in a global bond portfolio. And as this next slide will show, currency, especially also in the credit market, is becoming a bigger part of the thought process, investment process. So you have roughly in the bank, in the global high yield universe, it's primarily the U.S. dollar and the euro. Euro is about 80% of the universe. But you do have some other currencies, including the British pound and the Canadian dollar. One of the things we do at Brandywine is probably a little different, is that we will actually take on currency risk. So if like CEMEX issues a bond in dollars or euros, and we like the Mexican peso, we may actually hedge the bond back into Mexican peso through a currency forward. I don't believe there's a lot of people that probably are doing that in corporate credit mandates. Going to move on to emerging markets. Right now, EM is about 45% of the global growth, with China being obviously the big driver. Since 2000, China has grown from about $2 trillion economy to 12. We've seen a lot of countries benefit from that growth in the last 15 years. And the share of total GDP globally expand as well. So today we're around 45-50%. And from a purchasing power parity, actually, it's larger than the advanced economies. So if you look at the chart on the bottom, we see the growth of the emerging markets through primarily the local issuance, which is actually a positive. In the 90s, there was issues in the emerging markets, and a lot of these countries had significant hard currency debt exposure. Today, a lot of their debt is issued in their local currency. So today, as I mentioned earlier, we're at about $11.8 trillion, with $6 trillion of that being in the local government market and about $3 trillion in local corporate market. However, there has been a lot of issuance in the hard currency market as well. And these two charts really flag or identify the new issuance volume on the left-hand side in the high-yield and investment-grade space. We've seen, since 2008, tremendous issuance on an annual basis. And as you can see on the chart on the right, today the hard currency market is about $2 trillion. Some organizations like the BIS estimate it to be much higher than that. This is stuff that's actually traded in the marketplace. So $2 trillion, BIS estimates around $8 to $9 trillion. Just moving on to the global securitized debt market. Some of the stuff we've been doing the last couple of years in the securitized debt market, 2 years ago we rotated into Europe, especially in the residential mortgage space in Spain and Portugal. With the ECB's quantitative easing programs, especially that when they announced in the covered bond purchase program, the asset-backed purchase program in the fall of last year, we saw it's pretty significant value opportunity. And in Spain, because one, it's one of the largest markets there, and they were one of the first countries to actually make some of the reforms and adjustments. Housing prices had stabilized, and we started allocating there. Some of the interesting facts include, the mortgages are generally recourse. There's no walking away from the mortgages there. Their loan-to-value ratios were much better than the U.S. was during the crisis. And as I mentioned, the fact that some of these countries, including Spain and Portugal, are making the necessary adjustments. In the U.S. market today, we're really focused in on the CMBS market, primarily multifamily offices and hotels, seeing some pretty good opportunities there. I'm just going to quickly go through the loan market. The loan market, you know, from an issuance standpoint, the last couple of years, there was a lot of issuance for, based on refi. However, that has been changing gradually with some LBO and acquisition activity. From a credit rating standpoint, actually, we've also seen declining credit rating quality with the issuance of triple C, more single B issuance, a lot of second lien and cov light issuance as well, as you can see on the bottom two charts. From a leverage standpoint, leverage up on the top left now is at about 5 times. From a interest rate coverage, it's much better than that, but from a gross leverage standpoint, we're at about 5 times. And as you can see on the chart on the right, as I mentioned, the refi activity has declined, while the acquisition, LBO, and dividend activity, kind of the credit negative type events, are rising. Cov light issuance has been hovering around 60% of total issuance the last 3 years. That's kind of a red flag as well from a bond or a loan holder protection standpoint. And the other issue that we've seen in the loan market is just the sheer volume of mutual fund ownership, where you have a daily valued fund owning securities that sometimes take 30 to 60 days to settle. So that's, potentially a issue in the loan market today. So some of the stuff we're doing in the portfolios and our credit and multi-sector fixed income portfolios, we're using credit instruments, interest rate forwards, and foreign exchange forwards to hedge the portfolios or to actually augment the directional bias of the portfolio. So if we, are long bias and we are fairly bullish, we will, take on more risk through the derivatives market, or we'll pare back risk based on our view. And there's several different ways we can do this. We use the iTrax high yield investment grade swaps that are exchange traded now. We use the European crossover index, which is their proxy for the high yield market in Europe. And we'll use the financials indices too, the subordinated and senior indices. For bond futures, we'll use these to hedge our duration risk or make bets on the direction of rates. So if we, in December of 2014, we were concerned about the elections in Greece that were coming up and the ECB's announcement in January regarding the QE program. We were long significantly in the 30-year Treasury futures. Just going to go through some of the market trends as it relates to the high yield market globally. Non-U.S. dollar issuance, primarily in euros, continues to come at a record levels. This year's issuance is below the last few years' pace, just given all the volatility that's going on in the markets. Default rates, while they're still low in some sectors, including energy, metals, and mining, you are seeing some much higher default rates. From a maturity standpoint, there's really no issues with the maturity wall. We don't see any issues until probably 19 and 20. and then distressed ratios. There's a lot of distress in the emerging markets. With the continued sell-off in these countries for the last 3 years. a lot of these companies are either quasi government-owned entities or highly, closely linked to the sovereign. So if there's stress in EM, these corporate companies also are going to experience some stress as well. overall, based on our models and kind of views of the world, we do think that default rates will stay probably around to below average. However, there will be some segments of the market, like energy, that will be significantly higher than historical averages. The other thing that we're seeing in the energy market is the recovery rates will probably be much less than they had been in the past, given the amount of senior unsecured bonds that have been issued the last several years. So it's a pretty topical slide, given what's going on in the oil market, with oil down a little bit today. Last time I checked, the issuance out of a lot of these emerging markets, both companies and sovereigns, has been really, linked to commodity super cycle and, oil markets. You have a lot of like a Petrobras that's, highly stressed right now. So you're going to see the spreads continue to widen out as these stresses continue, and we expect default rates probably in the 5-7% range for at least for the energy market. The top chart is, had I put this presentation together, I would have put it, further in the front here, because this really highlights what's been going on in Europe. The banks have been deleveraging pretty much since 2009. You can see the top chart shrinking their balance sheets to the tune of about $560 billion. So as I mentioned, a lot of these European companies that traditionally relied on a Deutsche Bank or something to provide their lending, these guys are no longer there. So this is actually what's pushing these companies to issue in the capital markets. You can see in the bottom left chart the amount of loans they're dependent upon the loans from the banks. You're going to see that evolve over time and probably become more close to the U.S., which is more of an 80% dependency on the capital markets and 20% on the banks. We'll see that gradually evolve. And just lastly on China, the big theme for China really is the who's impacted. You look at Australia, for example. The Australian dollar is down about 40% during that 3-year period that I highlighted. About 35% of their exports are consumed by China. Brazil, that's in, current currency is off 40% in the last 12 months. Political issues, gridlock, their economy is in a recession. 20% of their exports are consumed by China, with a lot of that being iron ore. Countries not on here, like a Chile, highly exposed via the copper market, 40% of their exports go to China. So a lot of these themes in the emerging markets have been playing out now for around 3 years. Hopefully this stuff will come to an end at some point, but continue to see stress in some of these markets. That's all I have for a prepared presentation standpoint. Love to take any questions, whether it's the current market, evolution of the credit markets, things like that. Yes, Nedra? Yeah, so when someone refers to the credit markets being distressed, it usually means that spreads are spread relative to whatever the underlying government bond is over 1,000. Stress ratios right now are around 30%, with some sectors in the U.S. high yield market being significantly higher than that, such as energy, mining, metals. Those are the big ones. From the disintermediation standpoint, it really is the companies like there's a big German company that's been around forever, Schaeffler. They make high end parts for, you know, BMW, Porsche, and VW, and, you know, Mercedes, all of them. They've been in, you know, family-owned business, traditionally relied on, like, the Deutsche Banks of the world for their bank lending. And those guys are no longer there. So several years ago, Schaeffler issues bonds in the European high-yield market for the first time ever. And this company has been around for 40 years, roughly. So, and that's just going on constantly. There are tons of first-time issuers in the European market, you know, even today. So we've had the European market's expanded by about five times the AUM size in the last 6 years. Nedra? So for that example, probably wouldn't do something like that. You know, we generally, from a corporate credit standpoint, we will, you know, a lot of the bonds are issued in dollars or euros. So we have we've had a fairly negative view on the euro. So we've been hedging out all the euro denominated bonds back into dollars the last several years. Right now we're about market weight on the index relative, so we're 18% euro. The benchmark's at 18%, just given how fast and how far the euro is depreciated. We took off those hedges. So for another example, a couple years ago there was a lot of Polish telecom companies that were issuing bonds in the European market. So they were all denominated in euros. At that time, our firm had a positive view on the Polish zloty. So we used currency forwards to hedge the bonds back into Polish zloty. So you can't actually get a corporate bond issued in that local currency, but you can, you know, synthetically create that through a FX forward. I mean, from a day-to-day standpoint, currencies are pretty volatile in general, but when you're buying it at, you know, based on our models and our views on how a country is performing and all, you know, our various quantitative models that we use for the currency market, you know, we typically buy when these currencies are trading 2-3 standard deviations cheap relative to the model or, you know, the models that we have in combined with the fundamental economic research that we do. You know, we think we're buying at attractive levels. So, you know, from downside volatility standpoint, yeah, there's probably, you know, we think there's probably not that much. Yes. The two slides on page 22? Oh, yeah. So, absolutely. The rise in the dollar. So, you know, what I should have spoken about was the issue that there is potentially out there with all this issuance of hard currency bonds by corporations. You know, a lot of the companies, like if you're a Hyundai importer in Chile, there is a company that does this, and you have no revenues in dollars, but you just issued $700 million worth of bonds, you need to get dollars somehow. So when the Chilean peso sells off 40% versus the dollar, your leverage just went through the roof because now you need more Chilean pesos to convert to dollars. So this company actually... that I'm thinking of, you know, their leverage had been, they've been around forever, you know, since the early 80s, family-owned company. Their leverage went from 2 times to 9 times, and their bonds went from 80 cents on the dollar down to, I think, 35 cents. So when we were evaluating that company, we were kind of looking at, from the country standpoint, then the currency, and then down into the company and trying to figure out what was going on with the Chilean consumer. Other examples that are okay, you may have a company that is, there's a company in Brazil, JBS. They're a Brazilian beef company. Brazil is one of the top beef exporters in the world. They actually generate revenues in dollars. So for them to issue bonds in dollars is not a big deal. So there's that balancing act. So the question mark is, this has been going on across all these different companies that A, have revenues in dollars, or B, don't. And what's the balance? So when we're evaluating these opportunities, that's one of the key questions you have to figure out is their currency exposure. They may be hedging the bonds, but in Brazil, it's very expensive to do so. So they're probably doing it for short periods of time. And if it's a company that's has revenue in dollars, then it's not that big of a deal. That's actually, so for the sovereign part of that equation is kind of, historically, as I mentioned, they were basically like in the various crises in the 90s and 80s and 90s in Latin America, a lot of these debt was all in dollars. Today, they're all in local currency, really. Very little, even in Brazil, I think their hard currency debt is it's definitely less than 20% of GDP. Significantly less. And in Mexico, it's very low. So they don't have that issue that they did in the past, and now they have significant reserves. So a country like Brazil, where there's all this extreme volatility and the currency's off 40%, and their interest rates are at 15%, they have a tremendous amount of reserves, $350 billion of reserves. So it's, it's different this time. Well, don't want to say this time is different, but these countries have local currency debt. They have significant reserves compared to in the past where they had all hard currency debt and very little reserves. Yes. So all the work that we've done on the and actually I was just in New York a couple days ago, and I was at a conference where Ben Bernanke spoke, and he said it without saying it, that basically if he were in charge, he would not be hiking rates. I think it's a balancing act for the Fed because they, when you look at it, zero rates is really for extraordinary times. The U.S. economy is humming along. I mean, unemployment's at 5.1%. Part of that's due to the participation rate, which is debatable. But credit growth, revolving credit balances are rising again for the first time in like 3 or 4 years, 5 years probably. Auto sales, a lot of positive economic statistics basically. Then there's the issue with everything ex-US and the Fed, at their priority list, like ex-US is 400th on their list. They apparently don't care about the rest of the world. Whereas we hear Mario Draghi speak, he definitely talks about the rest of the world and China and things that are going on globally. So from a hiking standpoint, at this rate, they're going to hike at some point. And from an asset manager, someone in the industry, it's like, let's just do it. Even the finance ministers of Indonesia and some of these countries in the G20 meetings essentially just said, all right, let's do it. Get it over with. Let's just do the 25 basis points. They do 25 basis points, come out with some very dovish language about the terminal rate, and we're not hiking for a while. That would probably be the best outcome. But I think there's a lot of angst in the market for them to do it, and that we believe they should just do the 25, and we can all move on. Any other questions?